Pals.
Pals.
Hey, pals.
Welcome to the podcast, Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
And my name's Tom.
And this is the podcast where we talk about movies, love it or hate it, we debate it.
My name is Tom.
I put a little bit of a frill on that. Who wrote a question mark on the teleprompter? God damn it.
We do rate it, we do hate it, we do debate it.
We do all those things.
Fantastic. What a great intro, as per usual. So, as you might know, we're talking about The Iron Claw. You've clicked on the episode, you know what movie we're doing.
Yes.
News to me.
2020. Yeah, Marcus had no idea.
We'll just pause right now. You go watch it and then come back.
And welcome back. Yeah. All right.
Frank, that was wild, just staring at you. Neither of us saying a word for 2 hours and 12 minutes. Marcus, did you enjoy it? Did you like it? Well, we'll get into that.
Can't say.
So we're talking about The Iron Claw, starring Zac Efron, 2024 film.
2023. This year is 2024.
Didn't it come out in January?
No, it came out last year.
Right, so both of you can go and watch it.
Not in this country, I don't believe. In this economy? No. But
yes.
Hey.
It was released last year. It was eligible for Oscar season.
Okay, well, I apologize, but it came out in January here in Australia.
That's very true.
So it's a 2023 film written and directed by Sean Durkin.
This is true.
And shout your name if you like this film. Frank!
Tom.
Oh, Tom. Tom gave it a... Oh,
Marcus.
Kinda,
oh, my gosh.
We're going very, like, from shout to whimpers there.
Okay, so before we get into... your names and likes and stuff. We do rate films out of 11.
We do indeed, Frank.
And that's been an ongoing thing from the start of this podcast. Tom brought it in. He has a good reason for it.
He's got the goofiest look on his face right now. I hate this.
Why do we rate it out of 11?
I really hoped you'd forgotten this episode. I thought we'd slid past it just then when you're like, shout, you know, if you're like, I'm like, oh, thank God. Okay. I swear to God, we started this record session with Marcus saying, and Tom, you've got one for this. And I was like, yeah, totally. And I spent the next 5 minutes trying to come up with one. And I got nothing. You guys got anything for this one?
No. Let's tell the story as it was.
Okay.
I said, Tom won't have one, but he'll whinge and moan and talk about why he hasn't got one organized.
Yeah.
And we are.
Well, that's what he's just done.
Yeah.
I have one for the others we're doing later, but I don't have one for this. I guess it's 11 is the number of like vertebrae that Zac Efron like crushed when he got slammed to the cement in that one scene. Like that was pretty intense.
Far out.
That's one. That's something.
Sure. That's why we rate them out of 11.
Yeah.
Crushed vertebrae.
That scene.
Which I'm probably going to do to you later, Tom. Well, I feel like I was the most confident name, y'all. So I'm going to go first. And I'm going to give it a 7.5. It's pretty good.
Okay. I don't know what our name yells mean anymore then, because I'm giving it an 8.
Oh.
So.
What? Like, what?
I liked it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I expected... Frank's like, Frank! 7.5. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. What is that?
But sorry. You hesitated big time.
I just like to say my name.
That sounded like a fence sitter.
I think we both, Frank and I, should have switched with our tones. I apologize. But yeah, I'd go an 8 for this. I liked it quite a lot.
Interesting.
Marcus.
Wanted it to be an 8.
That you can, what leaving, do you mean wanted it to
leaving,
be an 8?
Yep. I wanted it to be an 8. I'll get into that. Mm-hmm. I will give this a 6.6.
Oh, okay. So we all like, kind of like
I'm kind of there.
Okay.
But.
Well, we're two episodes into the season and we've screwed the pooch on the format.
I think this is an interesting one. I think it's more interesting for us to all like something but be a decent amount of distance away from each other. I think if we're all sitting on, like we did Top Gun once and we all gave it like exactly the same score and we're like, what the fuck are we doing here?
And we all had the exact same experience.
I mean, we're all
on
the same side of the fence. If anyone were to hate it out of the three of us, it's me.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And I think is how we're looking
you
at
and
it.
I, before we even knew we were going to do this episode, probably about a month ago, we did spend about 10 minutes on the phone talking about this. So there's probably some things we'll rehash a little from that phone call. But I remember you saying, yeah, this didn't quite work for me. And I was like, I get it. It mostly worked for me. But yeah, I actually wanted to love this more than I did. I wanted this to be better than an 8. And I think 8's about where I'm at.
So I think everyone wanted this to be better. Like there's so much hype and sort of talk about, well, Zac Efron should have been nominated for an Oscar and
I kind of agree with that.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's fantastic in this.
Oh, so we're going straight in. So Zac Efron, you think was fantastic?
I think Zac Efron
better than him in Charlie St. Cloud?
I'm so fun. So fucking glad you said Charlie St. Cloud, because I was trying to work out how to work 11 into that. And I was like, I don't know, the amount of people that accidentally thought they were buying a ticket to the sequel to Charlie St. Cloud or something. Like, I couldn't work it out.
That's terrible.
I never saw that movie.
It's the film where Zac Efron had learnt to cry in acting class and then was like, I need a film for this, please.
Yes.
And he cried in like six scenes. And it was fine.
It's Ghost Brother, right? Isn't that Charlie St. Cloud? His brother dies and he goes to a secret spot in the woods where he can still talk to him. I think that is the plot of that movie. Like, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, that's not far off. I don't really remember.
I prefer the title Ghost Brother.
Yeah, Ghost Brother.
It's like a Ghostbusters
spin-off?
He ain't heavy, he's Ghost Brother.
Who you're not going to call.
Dead
brother.
Speaking of dead brothers.
The Iron Claw. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Quick synopsis, I guess we should do, shouldn't we? Mm-hmm. So, the
Bunch
Iron Claw.
Bunch of boys wrestling. You boys get in there and I don't want anyone coming out until they're slick with oil. You hear me?
That's my Holt McCallany impression.
It's pretty close.
No, sorry,
Frank. Synopsis.
The true story of the inseparable Von Erich brothers who made history in the intensely competitive world of professional wrestling in the early 1980s through tragedy and triumph under the shadow of their domineering father and coach. The brothers seek larger-than-life immortality on the biggest stage in sports.
Tragic suplex. From the top rope, it's a tragedy jump.
Oh, what's this? He's coming in with a deeply bedded trauma. Oh, that's gotta hurt.
Suicide reference.
A lot of sad things.
Look, it's a really, really, it's a true story and it is so sad. My God.
It is sad.
I don't want you to not get your flowers, Frank. That's the best synopsis read you've ever done. You nailed that. Have a single like stutter or pause there. I think he killed it.
Guys, that was really nice. Being nice.
That was really nice. I thought you did a great
52
job.
52 episodes and I can finally read. Go Frank. No, that's nice of you, Tom. Thank you. This movie is heartbreaking. I don't think the movie is as good as the story deserves it to be. Wait.
That's kind of my issue.
It could have been better. There's so much heartbreak in this film. So many scenes where you go, holy
shit. It wears you down after a while, right?
Like, I was sobbing at the end.
As was I.
I know we hate to say, well, that's the point. It's a true story too, but it's like, I don't know. The lighter moments weren't really there for me either. So it just felt like one thing after another and they weren't bridged well. I feel like it was just... Here's a tragic moment, and before we've finished talking about the tragic, and there's another tragic moment, and just piles on.
It kind of feels like scene after scene instead of a film.
Yeah.
Maybe, is my criticism. I feel like...
Rushed?
Yeah.
You feel the contraction in the last, like, half of this movie, essentially. Like, the last half of it really does feel like an abridged version. And this is a story that's very well known by... professional wrestling fans, but just in general, it seems like that one of those weird bits of ephemera that a lot of people like, the Von Erich family, like they were cursed. And it's randomly a thing that a lot of people know. And the most critical reviews I've read are people being like, this should have been, as annoying as it is that everything's a fucking miniseries now, this kind of should have been one. This kind of could have been 5 episodes instead of 2 hours and 12 minutes.
I agree. Yeah. Can I just say though that the Von Erichs do sound like
the Von Trapp family?
Well, like they should be in the circus, a trapeze family.
I mean, they're professional wrestling.
Potato, potato.
It's true. But no, I think it's an effective. I hadn't thought of this till now. Like, this has just come to me off the top, and I don't think you guys are going to like this, but I'm going to throw it in there anyway.
Go on.
This is a very different film to Maestro. But I didn't have...
I
know, right?
Where's it going?
Let him finish.
I didn't have a dissimilar reaction to it in that there are elements to it that I'm like, well, that probably really happened, but I don't know if that was dramatically well-founded or well-delivered in the film. It has some incredibly poignant and affecting performances and is well-crafted. There are stretches of it that don't work for me. And like that, maybe just because I watched them in close-ish succession. Like I probably watched them within 2 weeks of each other. And now that I'm thinking about them, I'm like, I probably would give both of them an 8. Very different films, very different aesthetics, but a similar vibe of like, this is a tragedy of a real person or a real family. And we are giving you some of these very private and intimate ways of looking at it that definitely had the participation, like, what's his name? Kevin Von Erich, who Zach plays?
Zach Efron is Kevin.
He's still alive, right? Like, in his participation, we get that whole coda at the end that says he has the big family and they all live on the ranch, which is wonderful to see that because, Jesus Christ, finally, something happy in life these people. Far out. But, like, it's the same with the, like, Lenny Bernstein's kids have been a big part of Maestro.
Bernstein,
and
wouldn't you say?
Bernstein, I'm sorry. The Bernstein Bears have all been a big part of it, and you can feel that influence. You know, you can feel that there is some homegrown and some really like subtle intimations in there. But yeah, they both are films that I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that was as affecting as the director clearly wanted it to be. I don't know if that landed for me, but I come away from it being like, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed The Iron Claw quite a bit, but what's the weakest part? Do you guys have a stretch or a section that you... Because I know my section, but I really don't like that much.
It was tricky for me. Look, I feel like this film was a tad too long for what it presented.
Really?
Because it was so heavy going, it just felt...
Laboured. You're like, I'm exhausted. Laboured,
like an actual marathon.
Can I ask if it had either been 30 minutes shorter or 30 minutes longer, do you think it would have been better?
Well, I agree with you in saying that it should have been a miniseries.
I
think extend it, make it a series.
I wish it was a bit longer.
A bit more effective. So more digestible. You do like an hour, one episode. Because like one episode is each brother dying.
Yeah. And it's too much. Like after a while it's too much and it's so quick in succession. And I think the prelude, the preamble, the build up, the first half of the film, I think is paced quite well. A bit slow at times, but like it's not bad and it really sets up something. And then it gets to the halfway point and it goes, and here's the rest.
Snowball. Yeah.
Like, yeah. It does go, look, we're in the final act.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't feel like quite the third act, but it's like, bang, tragedy time, and here we go. And it's just like, it's scene after scene of...
And my biggest grievance... Look, I hyped this film massively. I was so excited for it. I'm not going to call myself a wrestling fan, but I dabbled in wrestling growing up.
I've seen you wrestle.
You taught me a couple of holds.
You guys are basically the Von Erichs of Tassie.
that's what they say.
That's why we're not allowed back.
What?
I don't know. Where did you want me to go with that?
You spent a lot of time in the gym hugging each other.
Oh, my bad.
A lot of steroids.
There's a few angles you could take.
Shirts off wrestle. That was it.
You taught me a hold when we were younger. This is a visual medium podcast, so this is going to be great. But someone's sitting on someone's back and pulling their forehead, their head back that way, like as hard as they can. Do you know what I mean?
No, I was just trying to hurt you.
Yes. But but then I did that to you.
Oh, yeah.
In front of, like, I think my parent and your stepdad at the time, and they were cheering us on. And I was taking it to, like, as a child, I remember pulling your head back so far. And you got up.
My Adam's apple went through my throat.
And you gave me a look. I'm like 9 and you're 13. Where I was like, oh, he's actually going to murder me later. Like, when the parents are gone and they've stopped clapping, you're like...
Well, yeah, how dare you emasculate me like that?
100%. I did.
How dare you?
Tom was already on the steroids at that point.
But I have a distinct memory of that.
What a wholesome family story.
We have better stories.
It sounds like the Von Erichs'
dad. I've
got
plenty. We're going to hold them for later eps, I think.
Yeah. Do you remember you taught me how to cross swords?
Let's talk about digress.
Sean. I had a point, actually.
Oh, sorry. You were talking. Yes.
Yeah.
What was your point?
That I'm not a huge wrestling fan.
Okay.
But I know enough to know that certain things were...
The Undertaker.
A bit off key. And like the Rick... we'll talk about it, obviously, but the Ric Flair that they present in this film is so bad.
I have heard this.
It is so, so bad that if I went to a convention and found an impersonator of Ric Flair, it would be far better.
Yeah.
I don't know who Ric Flair is. I'm not a wrestling guy. I was like, this guy's kind of...
And I had friends who were big wrestling fans, and so I know enough from them. And I know that when I watched this film, I went with a guy who is super into wrestling, like knows it back to front and lives and breathes it. He was squirming in his chair and I was like, and I knew it was bad. And he was like, this is disgusting.
Yeah.
Outside of that, like the story's good. And I hyped this film up thinking it's going to be great. It's going to be Zac Efron. He looks incredible. Almost fake.
Roids.
It's so insane.
He's in such good shape.
But it's not just that, his body, it's his face, which, as we know, he had a facial reconstruction, which I think...
For whatever reason.
I think
he busted his jaw.
Yes. The PR is that he had an infection and something went poorly as well. I think he's had some health troubles. So yes. I believe that's part of why he's quite a different looking guy. But the haircut as well makes him look like He-Man. Like, he 100%. Looks like a kid has him as an action figure and the kid's decided, I'm going to give him a haircut. Yeah. And just, like, taken safety scissors to him. And like, that's what he looks like.
But the real Kevin's hair didn't look that bad.
No, I think they try to make them look a little sillier than they really did because in a modern context, we need to really get that. Like, oh, it was the 80s in case you didn't notice.
Yeah.
You know.
And this yeah, but I feel like, yeah, again, these are the flaws of the film for me. Like, performance is great. That's about it. Like, that performance is what really brings this film home, I think. So Sean Durkin wrote and directed it, right? I feel like maybe he was the weaker link.
The direction you went into or the script or both?
Well, both. Okay. I don't think the script is amazing. Nothing jumped out of me to be that's terrible or that's amazing. It was like just kind of middle of the road.
Yeah.
It got the job done. Mm-hmm. I thought some of the lines from the kids were woeful.
I was not a fan of the
I'm not
writing.
Sure.
I was not a fan of the writing.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
I walked away going, that could have been so much better with better writing. Mm-hmm. Again, the rush and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, like the kids at the end, man, my eyes nearly fell out of my skull. I rolled them that hard during that ending line where
we'll be your brother's daddy.
Yeah,
we'll be your brother's daddy.
So I weep.
And Tom
I was
weeps.
Literally weeping. I was watching this film.
Oh, that got you too?
Of course.
How does that
It did the opposite.
I was that entire scene. I'm welling up right now thinking about
it's
it.
It's kind of crazy.
It's so beautiful.
I wanted to feel more for him, and it pissed me off that by that point, I was like, come on, you could not ham that up anymore. It was the worst.
I went to see this with friend of the pod, someone we all know, Loxley, a few weeks ago, and he had, as much as he quite enjoyed it, very similar reaction to you, Marcus. We're driving back, and I was like, that last scene, and he goes, kids kind of ruined it for me. And I was like, really? And he's like, didn't love their acting. Thought it was a bit hammy. Thought it was a bit corny.
Pantomime.
And I was just like bawling in that scene. And I just was honestly like, I didn't notice. I was too busy like trying to contain myself.
I felt the same way. I'm sorry to cut you off, Frank. Sorry. I felt the same way about the boat scene. The afterlife moment.
I'm going to spend like an
hour
on that.
Where the brothers reunite finally and like, oh, you must be my big brother.
I was sobbing at that as well.
God
I'm sorry.
Damn, I just...
Sobbing.
It was so Hallmark.
I know. Here's the sickening. Thing. I feel like the direction and Sean Durkin is probably a great guy, but the direction's a bit like flavorless. The idea and the concepts are a bit like middle of the road, sure. But there's something about this story that is just so GD sad. All of them die. Every one of them dies. Three of them kill themselves.
Do you know what?
GD
said. The scenes
language
that I just referred to could have been made better without dialogue. I reckon show, don't tell. I would have gotten more out of it symbolically.
But then it would have felt exactly like Lord of the Rings.
Fine. Like, are you criticizing the Lord of the Rings now?
No, I'm not.
Where are we at?
You can't put
how dare you, Frank. Yeah. Turn in your fellowship badge.
Yeah. No, I do. I see what you're saying. I do. Like, that is.
You can't put that in the middle of the Iron Claw. You know, it's a bit too like.
Just having them on the end of the jetty and standing there and you're like, oh, the brothers, they're together again. You know, or the boat heading towards it. Like, symbolically, that would have landed better for me. And then just like, you must be my big brother. Ha 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 ha. And then they're all hugging and shit. And
I don't recall the hearty chuckle.
I mean, I think it was there.
That might have been your audience. Yeah.
There were so many eye rolling moments in this film that I was really disappointed because I wanted it to be better. Mm. It really had everything there. It really could have been better for me.
It could have been better. It really could have. It could have. I mean, the story such as this and the cast. That it is, this should have been nominated for 6 Oscars sort of thing. Like, it should have been Zac Efron's swan song, Jeremy Allen White.
Well, swan song implies that he's getting on that boat with Frodo and never coming back. Like,
Ricky Stenicki on the horizon as well. So he's not over yet. He's back, baby.
Here he comes, yeah. In a musical or comedy, Zac Efron.
It should be his moment of like, oh, he's arrived as a real prestige actor, right? I see what you mean. And there's a number of reasons why that didn't happen, but I don't know if we want to get necessarily into the meta stuff yet about like A24 and the Oscars race and all that. I want to say very quickly, this is going to be the first episode of the show ever where you guys dislike a movie more than me. And I disagree with you both so hard, I think I'm going to end up liking the movie more by the end of the conversation.
Like, oh, gee, you guys that didn't happen with Cats at all.
That's a good point. This is my you're right, this is my new Cats. You heard
this
it here first.
Cats 2. I heard it.
I agree with Frank about how affecting those moments are and disagree with you, Marcus, but I disagree with your take, Frank, that Sean Durkin's not a very good director. All right? I think this is a wonderfully directed film.
Really?
Despite the stretches of it that I do find less engaging.
But if you go, oh, how does Sean Durkin direct?
Sean Durkin, I think, has a very specific style with he's very theatrical in the sense that he will introduce actors into a set and in a very unflashy way, he will let the camera roll for like 6, 7, 8 minutes before you notice and you go like, holy shit, this is one take. And it's not a like Goodfellas going through the back of the Copacabana or like a Paul Thomas Anderson shot where it's just like, oh, how did they do this? But it is just like he really is giving these actors the chance to have 4 pages of dialogue uncut. And one of the scenes that stands out to me is when Jeremy Allen White comes back near the end of the movie and he gifts a gun to the father.
Yeah.
That's a scene. But even the scenes in the lockers after the fights, those all tend to be one shot. He places the camera very strategically for maximum emotional impact and to show the bond between the brothers, but also the weird fracturing that the dad introduces.
Yeah.
The way he shoots the wrestling, the first hour of this film is some of the most entertaining shit I've seen all year of last year. I was fucking in on the first hour. Every single time they got in the ring, I was like, fuck yeah, this is excellent.
They are the better moments in the film.
Yeah.
But even even you saying that, you go back and you go, oh, you know what? He does have some interesting choices. And those long scenes, especially when Jeremy Allen White comes back and the gun, it's like, why doesn't he want to fire it? And he just blows up. You're like, what the fuck's wrong with you? And what the fuck is wrong with
you? Sorry, just to be very clear, you both enjoyed that scene?
No, that's a really interesting point. I think that scene is shot really interestingly. I think on a story and character level, it's a bit of a mess. But I do like Sean Durkin's directing of that scene. But I do...
Interesting.
Jeremy Allen White's character is the worst part of this movie. I don't understand what they were trying to do. And when they try to give the movie over to him, when he said like 3 words and suddenly it's like, this is now your second protagonist. I'm like, fucking who is this guy?
I could not agree more. Yeah. Because and the build up to this film is he's at a point in his career where this was like an introducing, like people know him, like they're this is so like a ready big, for him.
Yeah, he's just come off.
You mean as
off
the bear, the actor? Yes,
the actor, Jeremy Allen White.
Shameless, the bear, and
I
then
love him. I think he's so talented.
Yeah,
and I was so excited. I was more excited for him in this film, and maybe that's where my disappointment lies, because and the build up to him coming back from the Olympics getting cancelled. Mm. And him arriving and then joining the brothers, and I was like, "Fucking here we go!"
But if you put his character story on paper, you go, "Wow, that's going to be awesome."
It's going to be cool. Yeah,
he goes to the Olympics. The Olympics get cancelled. He comes home. He starts wrestling. He gets the world heavyweight champion.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and he gets what was Zac Efron's, like it was promised to him.
Yeah.
You know, there's
he was going to be the one.
Zac's moment was. It fails. He fails.
Yes.
In his moment, and then
because he has a breakdown,
Dad being the ball buster that he is and just being just the fucking worst. And
GD not sorry, all right?
Not fucking sorry.
Thank you, Tom. Not thank you, Mel.
And side note, I think Dad was really effective in this. I didn't love him all the time. Yeah.
Interesting portrayal.
Yeah, but I think as the device is, he's there for the others to work off, right? I
mean,
that was effective for me, but
Holt McCallany.
Yeah, and then so Jeremy Allen White appears again, and then he doesn't get enough dialogue to be. I'm ignoring what you just said.
Then he goes and loses his foot in a motorcycle accident.
Mm.
Then he tries to get his prosthetic leg working, hates it, but then goes back to professional wrestling and he's quite successful again. And then kills himself.
These are stretches that you're like, that should have been an episode of a television show. Like we said, that should have been an hour. By the time he loses his foot, I'm like, I am really sorry. I don't know who the fuck this is. Like, I really
we don't get anything off him.
From him coming back from the Olympics getting cancelled, as Marcus mentioned, to Holt McCallany coming up and saying, you're going to join the family wrestling now. I'm like, yeah, truly, this guy has not spoken. And the bond between them, I think, is sold really well on a, like, sort of a textural level. Like, I feel
Visually, you can see it, and you're like, yes.
I see it. These boys care about each other. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry because I have to talk about it now. I might forget. The night they sneak out to take their younger brother to go and play in his band,
yeah,
and the three brothers are watching him play, and they're like, that's our fucking brother. I feel that bond so...
No, I believe that. I think that's a nice
Some
moment.
Of that shit is gorgeous. Yeah. It's really beautifully done, but I agree. The second they zoom in on Jeremy Allen White, I'm like, I just don't think this character is anything. I don't think there's anything to this guy.
Which is outrageous. As Marcus just said, he's just come off like so much hype
Such
from the bear,
a waste.
And he is so talented.
Yes. Such a waste.
You feel that. That's the biggest deficiency.
They
the
may as yeah. well... have just used close-ups of Zac Efron and just had someone telling him of the success of his brother, shadowing him at that point. Like, you might as well have had Jeremy Allen White off-screen doing everything and us just being told.
Even those scenes with Zac Efron, like when they're in the kitchen together after Jeremy Allen White has won.
Yeah.
And Zac Efron's like balancing that pride and that disappointment and that sort of anguish that he has over having to relinquish it to his brother. That's really powerful from Zac Efron.
Sorry.
Go on.
Sorry. It just occurred to me.
Yeah.
Every time we talk about Zac, we're saying Zac Efron.
Yeah.
We have to say his full name.
We
or
refuse.
He's not
if
real.
You just say Zac, it's like, who that fucking? No, that's Zac Efron.
He deserves Zac Efron.
It's like if we said Dwayne and we're like, who are you talking? The Rock? Don't fucking call him Dwayne. You
oh,
know?
Shit.
It's Zac Efron.
Sorry, sorry.
But yeah, he's great in that. Like, his performance, I want to take a moment here and talk a little bit more about it because Lily James, by the way, two characters that could have been so incidental in this film and I think are wonderful, better served than Jeremy Allen White and better performances are Lily James and Maura Tierney as Zac Efron's wife and Zac Efron's mother.
The mother was... excellent.
She's so good. What do you, when you see her, what do you
liar,
think?
Liar, liar.
Liar, liar. She's Jim Carrey's ex in Liar, Liar. That's who she is to me. She's also in Insomnia.
Audrey.
Audrey. She also.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
No, you mean, shit? I knew her face. No, as in, I knew her face and just couldn't piece it.
What?
There's that. Yeah. Do you remember Insomnia as well, the Al Pacino movie?
No, I actually don't.
No.
It's Maura Tierney.
I can't sleep.
You gotta stop your sons from wrestling.
Come on.
She's also the she owns the hotel in Insomnia. But like whenever I see, she's only in a few things that I've seen. She's a very successful actress. She's wonderful. Lily James is wonderful. Zac Efron in that first scene where
with his mother.
Where Lily James. Oh, that's great. But where Lily James has asked him out, and they go to the diner.
Yeah.
And she's like, what do you do? Like, what's your thing? And I think his performance is a little genius because he's playing a dumb guy, but he's not playing dumb is even a bit reductive. He's playing a guy who's not broadly street or academically intelligent. He's playing a well-meaning dude. He's not doing it in a patronizing, condescending way where he's like kind of Forrest Gump sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He's playing just a straight down the middle dude who fucking loves his brothers. And every time he talks about them, he gets a tiny bit choked up just thinking about how much he loves them.
Yeah.
And that scene, I was like, I'm fucking in.
It's so sincere.
Delivering this.
It's outrageous.
She comes and sits next to him when he's talking about his older brother dying. He's just like, yeah, I barely knew him, but just one day he wasn't there. And she's like, I'm going to come and sit next to you because I need to be on you.
I need to give you some effect. I didn't expect that. She like picks up a chair and moves around. I was like, oh, of course, she's giving me a hug. That's so nice.
They take that moment as well to let you sit with it and go, what's she doing? Oh, that's what she's doing. Yeah. Great bit of directing.
Maybe Sean Durkin is a genius.
Sean Durkin.
And it just took someone highlighting what he's doing.
But I want to circle back to that scene where Jeremy Allen brings the gun to Dad.
Weird scene.
Because you, well it directed. Is a weird scene. Weird you scene. Say well directed, but I hated the shot. Hated it.
Mm-hmm. Why?
It was set up like a stage play. We had everyone front facing. We had... And the camera panned from left to right and gave you this like stage setup, and it followed the action.
Yeah, but it also had it was depth.
I don't think if there was depth, it was not used well.
Zac Efron sitting in the back of the scene the whole time.
It almost feels like people are trying to find a way to navigate around each other in a straight line.
Sure, you can see the artifice to it.
It was a 2D shot of this scene, and not to mention that on top of that. The writing in the scene just wasn't good either. So
I find myself in the weird position of being like, I like what he attempted to do with the scene, and I still think, given how the actors managed to kind of navigate the awkwardness of what you're talking about with how much it felt like a stage show. Mm. I do like it. I don't like Jeremy Allen White's progression in that scene. It reminds me of, you remember Lord of War?
I do.
It's like Jared Leto in Lord of War. You remember when he shows up at Christmas and he tries to like fuck the Christmas tree because he's high on cocaine? And I'm just like, sure, Jared Leto, we know. But like, that's Jeremy Allen White's coming
in. And that
was
him just turning up on set,
that
right?
was just, yeah, they were like, and cut. And he's like, what?
That's the start of everything.
Jeremy Allen White comes into that scene in such a weird mode. And I know that's meant to show how and really like embellish this idea that this guy has gone off the rails and he's so temperamental.
But, sorry to just quickly jump in. Of course. They had not given any pretense of that. You'd seen him snort his pain medication once.
Yeah.
But had not seen any indication.
Look, I would like to see deleted scenes. It's almost like they've just cut.
Well, again,
Jeremy
it's...
Yeah.
Sorry, we wish it was...
There is half an hour, maybe even an hour of this movie added to that character that refines it to a like 9+ for me.
Because it
makes it a way better movie.
By editing that way and cutting crucial moments and scenes and the build-up and the bridging, it makes Jeremy Allen look bad.
Yeah, I agree. I think his performance comes across as erratic and not doesn't have an organic progression to it. It just feels like, so you're playing the troubled brother, give us this in this. And it feels like, yeah, we've missed two steps along the way. I also don't love as much as, you know, I think Sean Durkin knows what he's doing. I don't think he's an idiot, but I don't love how often he does like a bit of a Chekhov's gun in this. Like he shows the bloody vomit that Harris Dickinson's character has vomited into that, and you're like, well, this guy's dead in the next scene. Dead in the next scene.
Yeah.
And then Jeremy Allen White getting on a motorbike, and he's like, just before, he's like, just be careful. And it's like, well, something's going to happen to him. And then we see a gun that he gives. I'm like, well, fucking wonder what someone's going to do with the gun, right?
Yeah.
Like, those were moments where I was like, a bit too cute or a bit too... And someone, and again, someone could say, but that all really happened. And I'm like, doesn't make for good narrative.
It
doesn't
you, you don't have to
no,
show it.
No.
It just because those scenes happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I find that stuff a little too pat. I still really generally found this film quite compelling. But I agree with everything you're saying about Jeremy Allen White. I found his character a mess and his performance. I think there is a better, like you say, extended scenes, deleted scenes that serve him better.
Mm.
But he just came across as kind of lost in the film. Although his two best scenes for me, I'll leave one of them for the end because we've brought it up, but we will get to the ending of the movie. But where he's trying to get the foot to work, when he puts the prosthetic on and he's trying to go for a run out of the house and the frustration he feels with every step he takes, felt that. That was a real...
As an actor, that's his superpower. Like, he's so good at showing frustration and rage and internal anguish, and they just wasted him, man. And it's... Yeah. I've said it time and time again, but it's fine. Anyway.
But that's coming back to it. That's the hype of the film, and that's served... It's gone against it. Everyone's gone in and been like, oh my God, it's Zac Efron's swan song, forgive me. It's Jeremy Allen White. It's this massive cast. It's this incredible story.
Is Zac Efron dying? Like, what have you not told us?
You just said he's having health troubles.
And look, I don't know if I was really sold on the other brother as well, the youngest.
I quite liked his performance.
I really liked him.
I think he did a really good job with what he was given. I think that it was a bit jarring for me when it was like, I don't want any of this. I don't want any of this. I'm doing my own thing. Oh, now I'm wrestling. And to me, it almost felt too quick in him transitioning to like, I'm doing this now.
Yeah.
But again, that's because there's not enough time with anything.
No.
And because you know that the father's just gotten in the ear of him, impression him. That's...
But I almost need to see that.
Yeah. No, you do. Yeah. You need to see it. You need to know why. Is that's Stanley Simons who plays Mikey?
Mikey, the youngest. We should mention very briefly, I don't know much about the family, like I looked a little bit into the Von Erichs. There was a younger brother called Chris.
Oh, okay.
And he killed himself. And they cut it from the film because they're like, too much. Like,
oh, that's the line?
That's it. But that's it. You kind of go like,
if you're
going to
lean into it,
point does the story, like you're like, I just can't believe, like, yeah, this is the curse. You get it. You get the feeling that it's a curse. And as much as sometimes that became a little too insistent, the film doubling down on that idea of like, we're cursed, and Zac Efron... That was quite affecting, actually. When he goes and sleeps under the desk instead of sleeping at home because he can't deal with the idea that he's going to curse
his children.
That
was the most effective. Yeah. After the funeral, one of his brothers and Lily James is like, are you going to come home? He's like, I can't. And I was like, dude, go home. It's your kid.
That shit is hard.
Horrible to watch. I couldn't handle it.
Some great moments there, honestly.
And
this, have you both seen The Wrestler?
Yes.
I don't really watch wrestling. What are you talking about?
Now
he's the guy outside the door who won't let us leave. We just called him the wrestler.
Mickey Rourke as the wrestler.
He's the wrestler.
And this came out
Ramjan?
Speaking of swan songs, that's...
His last name, I think, is Ramjan. Randy Ramjan Jackson or something, because he does the Ramjan, like as his signature move. That's a great fucking movie.
Randy Robinson. Now, is that an A24 film? Was that early days of A24?
No, that's pre-A24. I couldn't tell you.
Because to me, that could have been.
Yes, right? It has. You're
and
absolutely right.
And that has elements in that film that I found far more compelling and emotionally
It's Searchlight.
Invested. Searchlight. Oh, it's Searchlight?
Yeah.
I felt more for him in his final moment in The Wrestler, you know, seeing him do this final, if you've seen the film where he, you know, he does his big last fight and he knows it's his last fight. And the film ends with him jumping off the top rope, and that's pretty much how it ends, right?
One of the best endings of it. Like, I remember just kind of standing up and going for a walk after that movie because it really fucked me up. I think it's a better film because it's got a tighter focus.
Yes.
I think Darren Aronofsky's a really good director who I haven't messed with as much in recent...
It's
an Aronofsky.
Right.
And I think the whole body horror, I mean, the scenes in that movie...
Where he's pulling, like, nails out of his skin.
After the staple gun. Yes, yeah, staple gun. And he's got, like, the glass as well, the fiberglass and stuff. And that stuff is what, like, I thought about when we were watching the scene with Zac Efron when he was taking on the Sheik, I want to say.
And he got slammed on the concrete.
And he gets slammed to the concrete. And I was immediately like, yeah, this has wrestler blood in it. The kind of like, these guys get hurt. Like, it's the most trite thing to say in the world, but professional wrestling fucks you up.
Yeah.
You know, it's
but then, sorry, you don't get enough of it because the younger brother, Mikey, breaks his shoulder.
I hated that scene so much. As someone who's hurt their shoulder very badly before, I'm sorry. The second he fell and grabbed his shoulder, I was like, nope. Oh, that really upset me.
He plays it very well. You're like, ouch, that really hurt. You just
uncomfortable.
But I don't think there's enough weight on the injuries that they cop. Like, because when Zac Efron hurt himself on the concrete, I was like, part of the bit, part of the scene, part of the, you know, the wrestling
match. So that didn't land for you?
It landed, but I was then confused. I was then questioning it.
Right.
You know, if I'd had a little bit more of like, oh, no. Like, if you divided what was wrestling and what was, like, what's part of the plan in the wrestling match and what wasn't.
Sure.
I would be like, cool.
That scene, watching that in the cinema, which you went and saw it in the cinema as well, right, Marcus?
Yes.
That was a great moment of sound design because there's so much of the film up to that point we're hearing like the fake sort of, or not hearing like the connects that aren't actually happening.
Well, and you can see, like when you watch it, it's like, that's a wrestling punch. It's not like,
and when he slams and hits that floor and the noise they use, you're immediately like, that was fucking real.
Mm.
And he is so unwell. And like the time it takes him to get back up. And then all his dad has to say to him, we really should talk about Holt McKellany's performance soon as the dad, when he comes in and's just like, why did you take so long to get up? Like, he has no sympathy. He's just straight up like, you need to get back from that. You cannot let that stuff wind you. You know, that's you losing your chance if you let that happen.
And it's,
oh my God, that scene. I thought that was a really effective scene. I really enjoyed it.
Well, talk about the dad. Go.
Holt McKellany, who probably most people will know from two things. These are the things I know him from. Mindhunter. He's one of the main detectives in that, along with Jonathan Groff and Anna Torv. But he's also the guy who brings back, we talked about this on the phone, Marcus, he brings back Bob from the Project Mayhem in Fight Club. He brings back Meatloaf's dead body. And when Edward Norton's trying to be like, this guy was a real person, you guys don't understand, he died. And he's like, I understand. In death, we have a name. His name was Robert Paulson. His name was Robert Paulson. And he's the guy who starts the, his name was Robert Paulson. He has such an iconic face. He kind of fucking looks like Duke Nukem. Like, it's just the second you see him, you're just like, I'm going to remember that guy forever. So when he showed up in this, I think he is astoundingly good in this movie. I think he is taking an incredibly different tact to what would typically be a bit of an over-obvious, abusive, toxic father.
Like Chris Cooper in American Beauty.
Hey, pretty good comparison. I think Chris Cooper is kind of setting that. It's good.
Setting the expectation.
Just your delivery on that compliment. Yeah.
I do think that's good.
That's two compliments
today.
I think
Chris Cooper is doing the more sort of...
I'm going to jump in. He's not being a wrestler. I mean, wrestlers are larger than life. They have to have the showmanship about them. They have to have the big personality to go with it. So although Dad's no longer a wrestler, he's, you know, through and through, he's always going to be one.
Yes. And he's
going to
be a violent, aggressive sort of dude.
That larger than life sort of delivery on things too, and I think that he sort of balanced that well from being what is effectively a real person and also never really turns off that wrestling side of him either.
Yes, but I don't think the movie ever telegraphs his abuse in a way that is obvious that most movies would,
no.
Right? And again, yeah. I'm not saying I think the Chris Cooper performance is really good in American Beauty, but obviously he comes in and beats the shit out of Wes Bentley at one point.
This
and,
is
know,
more
but
emotionally...
That's a sign of that's a sign of the times in terms of the filmmaking because we hadn't really seen that.
We don't... There's the one scene physical in this movie where he does the Iron Claw on one of the boys and he's like, that's how you got to go. And you're like, right, well, that's too much. But the rest of the time, it's all words. And he never, like, screams and throws things. No. He just berates them. He quietly tells them, I have my favorites. Some people hate that line. I think it's very funny. Where he's like, y'all know my favorites. First it's Kevin, then it's Carrie. But that can change. I think that's so funny and
it's emotionally manipulative.
Oh, my God.
The whole thing.
Very effective.
I sort of found him, sorry, I do think he's a little robotic.
I kind of
and
loved that.
And
about
I didn't
it.
I couldn't get past it. I was like
this man though, and I think I'm justifying it now, is not really in touch with his emotion. I mean he's sort of like a he's got maybe one or two gears when
he'd be
to
so
showing.
Suppressed.
Yeah. So I think that robotic, yeah, I think you're not wrong. I think that he just doesn't have a range as a human being in terms of how he's feeling, what he's thinking.
Yeah.
He's a one track mind too. Like he's got a goal. And he's going to achieve that no matter what. And he's obviously using his sons to achieve that, having failed himself.
He's very naked about that when he says, I couldn't do it, you need to do this. Yeah. I agree with you guys. I actually think that roboticism and that stiltedness is a part of it I like, and I like to think it's intentional. However, I think he can be very tender. He has moments. He leans over to Zac Efron and says, she's a keeper, son. Don't let her get away. You put her down, someone else will pick her up. And it's a really kind of nice moment of, as much as that's a very over-obvious thing to be like, I'm proud of you, son, because your girlfriend's hot. It's like, that's one of the nicest things he said to any of them. And then when they're at the wedding and he turns to Maura Tierney in a typical movie where we have like an overbearing, abusive husband or father, the relationship between the mother and the father would be fracturous. But they're like giggling teenagers at the wedding. And they're like, you want to get out of here and fuck? Yeah. And it's like, whoa!
Yeah, it's
kind of great.
It's like the Reverend and his wife in Footloose.
Hey, you know? That's a reference I don't get.
missed it by that much.
It's John Lithgow too.
Oh, my doppelganger.
So, yeah, your doppelganger. Actually, it's so weird.
Yeah.
I've taken time to process the dad's performance in this. And it's... I wasn't sure where I was with it.
What's his name? Jack? Is that the... I'm so sorry. We keep calling the dad and Holt McElhenney, but I think it's Jack.
It's Fritz.
Fritz is his first name?
Really? Yeah.
Fuck, I'd forgotten that.
They're like, it's... Yeah, they were talking about Fritz von Erich. Yeah.
Right. Well, but von Erich is not his real last name. Because his real last name was like Adias.
For 90% of the film, it's just dad.
Yes. I mean, they do just refer to him as that.
Yeah.
But Marcus, you mentioned... 10 hours ago when I brought up like Zac Efron's performance and what I liked about it, you said, the first scene between Zac Efron and Maura Tierney, which I think is a great scene as well.
I think it's an excellent scene. It's so he goes into his mother and says to her, and I'm loosely quoting this, something about, can you tell dad to go easy on
Mikey?
Yeah. He's too hard on him. And mum straight faces it. She's in the mirror doing a makeup or whatever, ready for church. And she just says coldly, that's between him and your father.
That's between them. Yeah.
That's between them.
I got to sort that out.
And it's just so disconnected.
Yeah.
And you can see the layers to it straight away. Like, you know, she's hurting. She wants to just have the nice Disney family. You know, she's never going to get it because she knows what he is. And she wants to say something else and just can't. And it's like you feel that push and pull there. For just a split second, and you see Zach's face just drop because he's like, come on, like, you're his mother. He can't talk back. He can't, obviously, he knows he's not going to get through to his dad. And so it's like, well, who can? That's it. You're the last person who can probably ask dad to do something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good scene.
I think it's, I think the movie does a great job of showing us what sort of family this is without ever overdoing it. We don't see them like in this obviously they're a religious family, but you don't get this like overzealous thing where we see them at church every day or we see them like constantly praising Jesus, you know? We know that it's a very emotionally sort of stilted and not particularly, you know, well-honed family unit, and yet we just have scenes like that. We don't have characters screaming at each other. The screaming comes right at the end of the film, and one of the most satisfying, albeit very upsetting moments is when Zac Efron finally confronts his father.
And just says,
I can't believe you fucking let this happen. And he's like, well, you know, he's a grown man. You know, you're all grown men. You should have worked this out yourself. And he just wrestles him to the ground and it's like strangling him.
It just strangles him and stops. And it, like, it felt like Zac Efron can't stop.
No, and you don't want him to.
No,
you want him to kill him.
That moment as an audience member where you're like, the worst thing you could do right now is kill him, and please kill him. Like, it's absolutely what I want you to do.
But again, this scene, I couldn't get out of my own head at this point, because once we'd seen a scene prior about... brother's name.
Kerry is Jeremy Allen White.
Kerry brings the gun at Christmas, gives it to Dad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, he's going to shoot himself, or someone's going to get shot with this gun.
Well, of course. I mean, you know the curse. You know, like, you know everyone's going to die.
And then not a moment later, we get that scene.
Well, we do have one scene in between, which is a scene where he calls Zac Efron. Kerry calls Kevin.
Yeah.
And that is one of... basically the only scenes of Jeremy Allen White's where I'm like, yep, God, this would have worked so much better for me if I had more of this character, because I think this is actually a really touching scene.
Yeah.
Calling your brother and just telling him, dude, I'm fucked up and
I
don't
know. It's probably the better set of dialogue in the film too.
Yes. I think it's very good writing in that scene.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderfully done.
It's almost like obviously, this being a true story, the story's already there, but it almost feels like the film was built around this one scene as well to me.
Sure.
It was a far more impactful scene for me, and I wanted to hear it and I wanted more of that, and I just didn't get it.
And that's it. You want so much more. And like the problem with, not the problem, but the emotional
gravity.
Not that you want scenes of them screaming, but you want them to crack. You want them to let out the tension. Yeah. It's so frustrating. But one moment that was very still that I loved is the mum. What's her name?
Maura Tierney.
She is about to get dressed for the funeral of her third son's death, and she's laid out the black dress that she's worn several times. Mm. And she's like, I can't wear it. I can't do it again. People will know I need a new dress. And then Lily James comes in, another wonderful performance, and is like, it's okay. We love you. Put the dress on. Let's go. Just simple, quiet, such a heart. And just what a great idea. Of course she doesn't want to wear that fucking dress again. Language. But like, that'd be so... Imagine how hard that would be.
I started crying and you jolted me out of it by calling out your own swearing there.
Yeah,
This
is a comedy. We're meant to have a good time on this pod.
The feeling of not wanting to do something, not wanting to go to a funeral, not wanting to have to meet with someone who you think is going to break up with you, not having to go to a meeting where you think you're going to get fired, whatever, and beforehand going, well, I can't go. I can't wear this. So if I can't wear it, well, then it just can't happen then. And that way it won't happen is one of the most despairingly human things I've seen in a movie recently.
Yeah.
Where she's just like, well, we'll have to call off the funeral. That's it.
It can't happen.
Yeah, fucked me up. It was a very harrowing scene, and you're right to call it out as a beautiful piece of acting by both of them.
That was the scene. I went, whoa.
Yeah.
It just turned on a dime because it is such a underplayed. And again, the mother hasn't had much to do, and you haven't really seen grief yet.
No.
Which is outrageous because there's so much grief to get through.
Yes. They even say when we've talked barely about Harris Dickinson, who I think is quite good in this and does probably more with the short shrift he gets than Jeremy Allen White. Harris Dickinson, for people who have
David.
Seen, as David, he's also in Triangle of Sadness. He was in...
such a good voice.
He's got a great voice. He was in Where the Crawdads Sing, and he was also in Scrapper last year, which is not a movie I love, but he's very good in it. And he does a very good job as the third brother. And
he's also in the third Kingsman.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's the king's man.
Here's the thing. Those three boys, obviously Zac Efron's been around forever, but Jeremy Allen White and Harris Dickinson both feel like they're getting a little bit anointed by being put as brother. It's like, okay, you guys have a prestige film career ahead of you if you want to take it. You know, even more so Harris Dickinson kind of with the films he's been in the last few years, but Jeremy Allen White because of The Bear, of course. But yeah, I think his death, which is so
It's off camera.
Zac Efron just comes in and he's like, your brother died while he was in Tokyo. He just had an embolism or something, or like a hemorrhage, and that's it. He died. Yeah. And they just kind of treat it like, well, we can't do anything about it, so what's the point of getting upset about it? You know, they have a very, very pragmatic but incredibly repressed approach to grief.
Yeah. It's like the film, for me, like that's the first – I mean, you hear about the younger brother's death, but then you get David's death, and then you get Mikey's death.
It is Mikey and then it's Kerry. And Mikey's death is very sad because he's realized he's woken up from a coma. He's had some sort of issue where
he had a high fever in surgery, so he's had brain damage.
He had like toxic shock syndrome, which they're like, yeah, this never happens, but it happened. Guess your family's cursed.
He had a terrible run.
And then just
from a shoulder surgery.
Him going to play guitar, which he can't really do anymore.
He just wanted
to be Noel Gallagher.
He just wanted a bit more Wonderwall.
You know, who amongst
us? I was going to make a joke. Sounds like Tom trying to play guitar. But
thank you so much.
You're getting there. Keep practicing.
Do you guys know what Noel tweeted at Liam once? Because they like... I'm sorry.
I'm going to say
language in advance.
It's weirdly has no swear words in it. Noel obviously is the biggest wanker in... wait, is Noel the lead singer?
Yes. Oh, who gives a...
Who fucking knows? Anyway, Noel and Liam like are known for bickering. That's the reason Oasis is not a thing anymore. And Liam said something in an interview and Noel tweeted at him, "Mate, you're a potato." And I'm just like, I don't think there's a better insult. He called his brother a potato.
So you brought that up because this guy in the Iron Claw has brain damage. Is that how you got there?
And then my brain did a spiral.
You are awful.
Shall we talk about, because I won't be able to forgive myself if we don't, and I kind of veered away from it when Marcus first brought it up, but the scene right after Kerry has shot himself. So Kerry's shot himself. I'm with you, Marcus. I'm like, yeah, well, this was telegraphed very obviously, and I don't think the fatalism makes it more tragic. I'm a little like, yeah, of course this is going to
happen. I almost wish it was more gruesome.
Kind of,
sure. More gruesome.
I don't know. Like, it just
a little less melodramatic, even though this movie kind of does a good job of with its melodrama, but of like him literally arriving at the house, hearing the shot, and running to the tree. And I'm like, yeah, this is a little kind of, I don't know, like schematic in a way that I don't enjoy.
And then, I did love, sorry, just after that, when he picks him up and carries him.
Picking him up and carrying him, I thought that's very tender and sad. And then the moment that breaks the movie for some people, including Marcus, including Loxley, who I watched it with, and other people, is the afterlife. And the first thing we see is Jeremy Allen White with like, all we see is Zac Efron looking at his brother, and then suddenly we see Jeremy Allen White walking. And the first thing we see is he jumps on both his feet. And he looks comfortable. And you're like, oh. Okay.
Oh, something's not right.
Walks to a barge.
He didn't have that before.
He found the jump button.
I got magic legs.
And he crosses the river and he finds his brothers.
Like Frodo Mikey, and Sam. Yeah.
Like Frodo and Sam. Mikey and David. And he hugs them. And then he sees Jack and says, "You're my big brother."
Guys, he's crying.
I'm going to start crying. And then he hugs them. You're and pathetic. I'm already like, this is actually very emotionally affecting.
Yep.
And then it cuts to a shot of Zac Efron. And the most tragic and compelling thing about that moment to me is, of course it's not the afterlife. It's just what he
is picturing.
Hopes that his brothers could find.
I missed that.
It's so sad.
As in, I missed.
As in, you're like, wait.
You thought this is actually heaven versus this is his projection of what.
Yeah, I think that my take on it was, they're giving us the afterlife.
Yes.
Here's what's actually
which I
happening.
Think is a lot more schmaltzy and difficult. But I think but even so, I was kind of there with it. And then once I was like, no, it's just Kevin trying to find some sort
but
of.
But also,
like,
it's Kevin alone on Earth by himself without his brothers who he loves.
And on the other side. And there's another one that the movie didn't even deal with.
And his brother's
there's a sixth one.
His brother's laying on the table in front of him too. Like, he's putting... That's where they eat.
Okay.
So...
Oh, this is a hygiene issue. Health inspector comes in. He's like just tapping his pencil on his notepad.
It's a crossover with the bear. This is not going to be food safe.
It's a sad moment.
It's a harrowing moment.
It's devastating. Absolutely.
Again, and I think you cut that scene away, I would have much rather just having
Zac Efron staring at.
Kind of. No, just having his brother on the table and just having a moment.
But you still let him
St. Cloud the crap out of that. Like,
but I love that they didn't. He didn't cry until the end,
which was
tears of happiness, because he's with his sons. Mm. Oh, and I'm already tearing up. Here's, oh my god!
Here's the thing.
Oh.
The line that gets me as much as the little boy's line does is when he says, and apparently this is a real quote from the real Kevin, "I used to have 5 brothers and now I can't even call myself a brother anymore." And that is...
That's not what he says in the film.
I think he says, I used to be a brother. Oh, I thought he said I used to have something and now I can't. Well, either it's
now,
like,
I used
now
to be, I, but now I'm not a brother anymore.
And now I can't even call myself a brother. I'm sorry. Sorry. That's probably what he said in real life. But yeah, I can't even call myself a brother anymore.
Your story doesn't check out, but keep
going. Wow. Who wrote this?
This is the right time. When we're vulnerable, really stick it in.
We've got to bring it up light, because if we're all crying...
And I don't have any issue. Nay, I applaud the young boy's delivery of, "It's okay, Dad, we'll be your brothers." And I think that was... fucking beautiful.
I think it's good enough that it doesn't ruin the scene.
I have to watch it again, and maybe that kid sucks. Maybe that kid is holding the script and he's just like, "It's okay, Dad, we'll be your brothers," puts arm around Zac Efron. Like, maybe
is every line the sons have, the older brother says, "Let's go play." And then the younger kid goes, "Yeah, let's go play." Like, it literally echoes everything he says. So then the last line is, "We'll be your brother's dad." And the younger kid goes, "Yeah, we'll be your brother's dad." And it's like, say something. Think of your own thing.
No, you're right. Yeah, maybe, idiot kid.
Yeah, you dumbass.
I will agree with you. I think that maybe that was the problem. Because the line's there. Look, I am the first motherfucker to cry in a film. No, you're not.
Tom Butler is in this room. You are the second motherfucker to cry in a film.
I reckon you're third.
You are so right.
I cried when I explained the scene to Lucy the next morning. I was like, I was sobbing in bed watching that. She was like, "What?" I was asleep. And then I was like, "Well, let me explain the scene." And I said, "So Zac Efron is there?" And she was like, "You all right?" And I was like, "Yeah, it was so beautiful."
What is wrong with us?
I did the same thing. Yeah. I told Kath the ending, and as I said the lines, "It's okay, Dad, we'll be your brother," I just started crying. I mean, and she's like, "Jesus Christ, the Zac Efron movie?" And I'm like, "Yeah, the wrestling Zac Efron movie."
Each girl sounds rethinking who they're with.
And then as I'm like fanning myself, I'm like, I still had problems with it. wasn't a perfect film. Allen White misused.
My point is that I'm usually very emotionally invested.
Sure.
Yeah.
And when the line hit, I even thought to myself, "God, this should have got me."
Yeah.
But what about...
That's an awful feeling.
What about
I get that
30 seconds should have got 30 me. Seconds before that, when he's sitting there and he's just watching them playing and he's just crying to himself? Surely...
That was better for me.
Yeah. So if you had...
I felt more there because finally he was letting it go.
Yeah.
And that was better. And then the kids came in and just fucking stomped it. Like,
well,
bite the curb, motherfucker.
Wow. Okay, you can't reference American History X.
No. I just checked the rules, and it turns out he can.
He can do whatever he wants.
And he did.
Oasis, American History. I'm just checking my bingo card.
I think. God damn.
Yeah, and I think Zac Efron. You said at the start he should have been nominated for an Oscar. Do you think?
There are people who were nominated. I would have knocked. Like, I would have knocked.
I think he
probably
was
probably Coleman Domingo.
He was
out,
let down
and
by
I
wrong
like
writing.
Coleman Domingo.
It was bad writing.
I
don't know if there's bad writing in this movie.
It could have been better for him as a vehicle, I guess you'd say.
Sure. My issue with the script
Let's
is
talk about
not...
the HGH.
Shall we? What do you mean by that?
Human growth hormone.
Oh,
how
sure.
many steroids are they all on?
I don't think Jeremy Allen White is, but this is all speculation. But no, I think not. That no, Zac Efron, yeah, is made like we'll talk about Dune 2 one day, and you know how they've got those nose plugs. Like, he just has one of those, just mainlining steroids. Wait, do you not want to mention that we're going to?
Why does he do that?
He's an idiot. That's why.
Oh my god,
Dune 2 one day.
So, is anyone going to throw in the proverbial?
Well, one thing I want to say before we wrap up is, as a wrestling fan, I could see why this wasn't great. It was a bit of a letdown.
I don't think it's a wrestling movie.
No, but
you know,
but
so the first half sort of.
Of course, it kind of gears up for it. But wrestling fans go in wanting far more out of it and didn't get it, and they're not there for grounded performances either. So they're getting nothing out of it, really.
Yeah.
And there was two two cameos that I spotted. One very obviously, like, rammed down your throat, which was Ric Flair. The Rock?
Wait, you mean the actual Ric Flair is in it at one point, or you mean as in the
guy? Oh, no, no, as in a referencing of the time. And sure. The other thing is when you see the books, when Zach has taken over the Wrestling Federation from his dad,
uh-huh.
and you see the books for the lineup of what they've got geared up, and you see Andre the Giant written down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's one I know.
Yeah, and so there was things
inconceivable!
Like, there might have been more. There might have been more little kind of throw-ins and whatever callbacks to the time, but it wasn't enough for a wrestling fan. So, and they're not there for acting because they wouldn't be into wrestling in the first place if they were.
That's an interesting point. There's been some good actors come out of that brand, like obviously Batista recently. But yes, I agree that typically it doesn't. They
name
don't
another.
Tend to get
name another.
I mean, The Rock has a no, good charisma. The Rock is,
he's great
I don't
and
know
be
if
cool.
He's a good actor.
He's great and be cool.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I think he's okay in that movie.
The Rock.
He's not The Rock in Be Cool. He's like...
No, he's playing something very...
The very like, camp bodyguard who wants to be an actor.
Yeah, kind of at an obtuse angle. I think he's pretty good at Jumanji.
Obtuse. Yeah, I failed geometry. okay, so anything I'm going to throw in the power?
Yeah, I'm going to go lower.
What?
Yeah. The more I've talked about it, the more I'm like, I'm just sad. I'm disappointed. I wanted more out of it. I see your points. I don't disagree with you, but also you're
But I also
wrong,
disagree so. With you. So you're going to...
I'm going to throw down to a 6.
Well, that's not even...
It's a little throw.
That's a very that's a bit of a throw. I'm going to do a little throw as well. I'm going to go up to like an 8.3.
Yeah!
I really talked myself into liking it more, yeah, having you guys make such shitty points about
Would
it.
Would you watch it again?
Yeah, 100%.
Next week?
Yeah. Frank, are you not... What's? Did you not throw in? Are you just...
No, I'm going to stay where I was.
Okay.
He skips himself, and rightly so.
Guys, I know what's happening. We've finished.
I could, if someone was like, I want to watch that movie, will you come watch it with me? I would go watch it with him again.
Okay, cool.
Well, I absolutely will watch it again. I'm happy to cry again.
Good for you.
Loved it.
Thanks for being here with us, listener.
Brass World! Through in the past.
Thanks for listening to Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name's Tim.
And this was the Iron Claw.
It was.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think. Give us an Instagram or an email at ohheypals@gmail.com.
Yeah, won't you give us an Instagram?
Yeah, give us one.
Come
we'll,
on.
We'll claw you. You don't claw us.
Yeah.
Call us on 04 05 04.